Welcome to Everywhere and Nowhere, a Sheffield Wednesday podcast brought to you by The Star, with Joe Cran, Alex Miller, and your host, Chris Holt. The Blues got the Blues, but the Foxes were just too cunning for the Isles, even if they're giving a little bit of a helping hand. It's been another up and down week for Wednesday. Fan protests, a decent win, another defeat, and a couple of injury blows. A week's work for a win. I'm Chris Holt, and as usual, I have with me Joe Cran and Alex Miller to look at the latest goings on at Hillsborough on Everywhere and Nowhere. Gentlemen, we find ourselves here once again, similar to last week. Alex stuck in a slightly more salubrious hotel than he was last week. Joe sitting his feet up on the couch in his house. I feel like your match days drag on a wee bit longer than everybody else's.
We always seem to have loads to do. And it was a nice change last night, actually. We're pretty much always the last to leave, aren't we, Alex? Like, we get chased out of stadiums a lot.
Yeah. It says something for the commitment of the Leicester pack. they were still slaving away, but... Yeah, more salubrious hotel. The Wi-Fi not quite as strong as at the hellhole that was the Britannia Coventry. But
we've named them. He's named them.
They're yet to respond to my second strongly worded email. They're an absolute shambles of a company. So. To be fair, because last week you did say the hotel chain that will remain unnamed, but it sounds like the Britannia. So I think their cover was pretty much blown.
Yeah. Well, that's where it goes. I have no apologies to make for shoddy service on hotels. Anyway, right, we're going to go back. It's been... Obviously, it's been another newsy week at Wednesday, as it always is. We're going to start off with a win on Friday. Very good win. I won't say they didn't play particularly well. They weren't absolutely dominant, but they took their chances, which has been the case this year, and obviously with Ikeogwu being the man who gets them, that's a big positive, because you always want to see your new signings hit the ground running as soon as possible. It was a good win, but it was probably... Now, I'm going to say this. I thought his name was... Because why not? That's how it's spelled. But I'm since learning that it's Ian Poveda. And he was the key man.
Yeah.
Was he not?
Yeah, Poveda was great. He just it started early doors as well, didn't it, Alex? Like, you could see with him, he was going to have one of those days. There was a couple of touches in the first few minutes of the game, and you thought, yeah, he's up for this one. The goal, the assist for the goal was brilliant. I don't think I'm being overly dramatic and like with recency bias. I don't think I've seen a player do that kind of skill with an actual end product on the end of it for years. Like, the quality of that assist was so good. There was a little bit more a few minutes later on the edge of the box as well. And there was one touch. And again, I realise I'm being very, very dramatic here, but there was one touch that he did. The ball came down from about 40 foot in the air and he just touched it like Ronaldinho, mate. It was unbelievably good. But yeah, just a real shining performance from him, and I think we can see a few more of those at Hillsborough. We'll be all right.
It took me a second to learn the dawn on me there that you just compared him to Ronaldinho.
No, don't get me wrong. I didn't compare him to Ronaldinho. I compared the touch to Ronaldinho.
And you nearly got me there. I was kind of drifted away. I don't know what my next question was going to be, and then did he just say he's like Ronaldinho?
Can
The quality of Alex's Wi-Fi is absolutely dreadful at the minute. And nice call, Joe. I'm going to stick with you. What I thought, I'm going to be a little bit more realistic in my comparisons, perhaps here than Ronaldinho. He does have a little bit of forest area about him, doesn't he?
Yeah, in more ways than one. Even to the point where there was a picture of him and Ike Ugbo after the game that looked very much like Lucas Joao and Fernando Forestieri. There's a very similar picture that people brought up. But yeah, he's got that little tenacity that Forestieri had about him, that low centre of gravity, quick feet, and he strikes a ball nicely as well. He was a little bit, obviously we'll go on to the Leicester game, he's a little bit quieter there, which you can understand. But yeah, against Birmingham, his first game at Hillsborough, he really, really endeared himself to the crowd. I think he's one of those players that can really get people on the edge of the seats. And I think Wednesday needed that. They needed that little bit of a spark. And I think with a team that's been so heavily reliant on Barry Bannon as a creative cog in that midfield, it's nice to have somebody else there that people can worry about.
These kind of players are not quite as, particularly in the Championship, I think you don't see too many of them these days, do you? And because everything, football these days is very much measured and patient and, everything, as you say about Bannon there, Wednesday could pass the ball, through the midfield about six times, and then just wait for Bannon to find that kind of really cutting pass that makes a difference. It's rare these days to see a player who you can get on the ball and he just does a trick. Does something nice, gets a ball in. I would like to see it all the time. I think because 9 times or probably 6 or 7 times out of 10, it probably doesn't work. But when it does, there's nothing like it, is there?
No, and I think that's what so many people watch football for, that little bit of the spark of the unexpected. And I think you're right. Football has become very robotic now. There's a lot about the game that is, you look back at what we used to see with players like Ronaldinho and players who were always looking for that, always trying to find that trick, always trying to find that moment. And I think there's so much, it feels like there's so much on the line now that it's almost been, I think, taught out of people a little bit. I was reading a thing with the Argentine manager the other week, and he basically said it started at kids' level as well. Like they're almost over coaching children, so that they're not being able to have that creative element to the game anymore, because even at youth level, it's become so, like, winning has become so important. So to see someone doing what he's doing, he's just really nice. Like you say, there's going to be times when it's frustrating because he'll try it and it won't work. But as long as every now and again he pulls a few off that do work, people will be happy with it, I think.
One thing about Friday night was they were quite fortunate in that Birmingham couldn't score for Toffee. I nearly said what I think is quite an old-fashioned Belfast phrase, which they couldn't score a sideboard with a hatchet. They had a lot of chances, but they didn't quite take it. On another night, Wednesday could have quite easily lost that one. So there was some element of fortune in it, but you don't want to dwell too long on that, because that's what happens. However, when you came to last night, Tuesday night, you saw the difference between teams who have Jamie Vardy and other players who very much know how to take their chances. And that is the issue with Wednesday, really, isn't it? They do concede a lot of chances, don't they, in games?
Yeah, they concede a lot of chances and they don't take their own. And I think that was evident last night. By the end of the game, Wednesday had more shots on target than Leicester. But Leicester are just, they're so good. Like the first half, I mean, there was points when Mavididi was, it literally looked like he was taking a mickey. Like he was just drifting past people, sticking it through people's legs. And it wasn't like step overs and tricks and stuff like that. It was just like quick feet and just sheer ability. But yeah, they were knocking it about so nicely the first half. It did feel, I said this in my match report, you know, there was an element of the second half was much better. Wednesday changed the shape. They went to back three. They changed the players and they were a lot better. I mentioned in my match report that I do wonder how much of that is just down to, you know, Leicester took the foot off the gas a little bit and they weren't as, weren't as driven as the first half. But yeah, Wednesday were far better. But I think you're right, the gulf in class between the Leicesters of the league and where we are with Birmingham and teams like that, it's so vast. And I think just going back to the Birmingham game a little bit, Wednesday have played a lot better than that and lost under Danny Rill. So you've got to take those. When you get a game when, you know, first half, they weren't at it really. They could have gone behind. They didn't. I think you've got to take those wins, really, because we've had enough where it's been the opposite way around. So you've got to take the rough with the smooth, I suppose. But yeah, the Leicester game, it almost felt like a free hit beforehand. And I think if you'd offered a fair few Wednesday nights 2-0 before the game, they probably would have taken it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Matches against Leicester aren't going to, this has become a cliche in itself, aren't going to define your season. It's what you do against, you know, the teams that are kind of around. Had 6-7 places above you. However, you touched on it there about whether or not Leicester took the foot off the pedal a little bit, but that change in formation did make it quite difficult, and the Leicester manager did say that they found it a lot more difficult to break through. With that in mind, do you think that it's something that Danny Rill needs to think about going forward when you're having to go to places like Leicester away? You know, when you're going to play really tough games away from home, do you try and not be quite as stubborn with the way you play and just go there and say, let's see if we can scrap out a point here? Or do you stick by it and kind of hope that you're creative players something for you?
I don't think that's the Danny way. I think he's very, whether that changes as he gets a little bit older, I don't know, but he just doesn't strike me as the sort of manager who will be ever happy to go for a point anywhere. Like, I think he wants to be on the front foot all the time. And it was interesting, I actually asked him that after the game. I was like, you've switched to back five and it's worked. You know, do you think that's something that that you could do going forward now? He said, well, if you remember, we did that against Southampton and then they scored three against us. So I was like, oh yeah, fair point. That's a valid one. So yeah, I think he will look at it. He has looked at it before, but Wednesday did look a lot more sturdy. There was more praise for Liam Palmer last night from Danny, who started the season by saying he's definitely a right back. We see him as a right back, to now Danny saying, he's been great in midfield and now at centre half as well. So I think he said he might be better as a centre half or as a midfielder. And Liam Palmer does this to every single manager that comes into Sheffield Wednesday. It's like they try and leave him out and then realise, oh no, he's actually very useful. It's been happening since Liam started playing for Sheffield Wednesday, and I think it will continue to happen until he leaves, if he ever leaves. But yeah, it was just they looked a lot more solid with a back three. They looked a lot more composed, and I think it also because of the like with someone with Marvin Johnson's ability to cross a ball, the back three allows him to get further up the pitch, and he can put in he can put in balls from further up and more regularly because of that formation change. And I think that is a good thing for Wednesday, because Marvin Johnson on that left-hand side is one of the biggest threats that Wednesday have actually got.
I'd just like to point out to everybody that Alex isn't coming back. Technical difficulties in Premier in Leicester have meant that he is unable to join us for the remainder of this week's podcast. So apologies for that. You've all been denied the wit and wisdom of Alex Miller this week. Positives from last night, were there any, apart from the kind of the sturdiness that, shall we say, that came about in the second half?
I think the fact that they didn't crumble after the first goal was a real positive to take. We've seen that in recent weeks where, you know, obviously the Huddersfield and the Coventry game, the Coventry game, they fought back from the first goal, but the second one went and then they fell apart. Obviously, Huddersfield was a complete disaster class in how to not handle a conceded goal. But against Leicester, they stood firm. The second goal... The first goal was a disaster from Wednesday. Like, it was just one of those where every single person in the away end, when it came back to James Beadle, was just going to get rid of it, just lump it, get it anywhere up the pitch. And obviously, he decided to go short. Wednesday are playing out the back. These mistakes are going to happen. But yeah, it was an irritating goal to concede, especially at the time. The second goal is just like, I'm sure people will find a way to criticise, but the ball over the top was perfect. The Dewsbury Hall first touch to lay it down to Vardy was perfect, and his finish was unbelievably good on the first touch. Like, it was just pure Leicester being better than Duffy Wednesday.
That goal has been scored, you know, with different personnel apart from Vardy about 100 times.
Yeah.
You know, that is just something that Leicester do and have been doing consistently since Vardy's been playing up front for them. So I wouldn't... I think any criticism from that respect would be a bit harsh. It was just a really good goal.
Yeah, exactly. A really good goal. Really good footballers playing really good football is effectively what it was. There's not much you can do about that. But yeah, I think, like I say, there was a few... The fact that Wednesday created as much as they did in the second half was promising. You know, this is a very, like I say, a very good Leicester side, and I think they ended up with 13 or 14 shots, which is, there'll be a lot of teams in the league that won't have got that against Leicester. Yes, it doesn't help the result, and you're talking about stuff that doesn't really matter, because ultimately there's only one stat that does count. But yeah, I think that with the Birmingham game coming as a win, with the Leicester game playing out the way that it did by the second half, Wednesday can take positives into going against, well, I mean, it's four massive games for Wednesday now, with Millwall, Bristol City, and then obviously Rotherham after that. Those three are huge. And I think that another positive that you should probably mention, and Danny spoke about it after the game, the Wednesday Arts were ace last night again. You know, the 2-0 down away at Leicester, and they're still, you know, going away, and Danny sort of said afterwards that he felt like their reaction after the game showed him what he needed to see, that they still were still behind what they were trying to do. And I think the minute the fans turn off and throw in the towel, it can be telling. So yeah, Wednesday fans doing what Wednesday fans do still is definitely a big positive to take.
We'll talk more about a bit later. In the front, apart from the actual defeat, we learned of injuries to Akinfemiwo's name properly. This problem the other week. Akinfemiwo and Christian Pedersen last night. I just tried to say it really fast there so nobody would notice that I didn't say it properly. I'd say a bit. Big injury blows. We don't really know entirely how good Christian was injured, so that's a blow in itself. And for me, Will has been a key player this season. this is just what you didn't want.
Yeah, it's also just very Sheffield Wednesday, isn't it? Like, Christian Pedersen coming in, playing, I think, 60 or 70 minutes against Huddersfield, coming on as a sub the other night. And now, we don't know how long it is, but it doesn't sound good. You know, when Danny said, I think his exact words were, some weeks and more, which, considering that we're in February, it does not bode well about when they'll be back. It also leaves him incredibly short on the left-hand side. Aside from, obviously, the fact that they're both injured and it sounds like it could be quite long-term, which is bad in itself, you've got Akin Fumero, who is, you know, a left-sided centre-back who has done, you know, has done a job at left-back on many occasions this season, and Pedersen, who is a left-back who can play left-centre-back as well. And all of a sudden, you've got Marvin Johnson and Reece James, and that's pretty much it. You've got Sam Reed, who's come through the academy, that might be looking at this and going, I've got a bit of an opportunity here. Whether Wednesday are able to sign replacements, Danny's spoken a lot about the free agent market and that he's looking in there. But yeah, the Pedersen one especially, it's like, how many times have we seen it over the years where Wednesday have signed someone and within weeks they're just unusable again? It's
This is the problem with ending up signing players who haven't been playing an awful lot, because when you put them in, unfortunately, what tends to happen is they pick up injuries because the bulk of work that they've been doing has increased significantly in the space of a short time.
Especially with Danny as well, you know, the way that Danny plays, the intensity with which he wants his players. I think it was like 5 months since Pedersen had kicked a ball, something like that, when he came in for the game against Huddersfield. Obviously, he didn't get injured in that game because he's gone and played after that. But yeah, it's just a concern. Wednesday's squad, we spoke before about them effectively coming out of the January transfer window weaker than they went into it. And, you know, obviously, if those two are injured as well, then you're weaker still. It's a concern. But I think that, I suppose the plus side is that, you know, the Birmingham game, they managed to sort of see out when Akin had gone off. Pedersen only played a bit part role in that game. So Wednesday have got the players to get through. They've shown that. Whether they can do that over the next 14 games or whatever it is, it remains to be seen. And obviously, the more injuries you get, the more concerning that gets. And yeah, let's just say Wednesday don't have the best record for injuries. So I very much doubt that's the end. That's the last. I don't think that Akin and Christian Pedersen are going to be the last injuries that we see. On the plus side, Momo Diabe could potentially be back before this weekend. He went off against Birmingham, missed last night, but Danny says that he's hoping he can be back for Saturday.
That is a big boost. Off the pitch Friday night, we should really speak about the fans' protest, which, from the organisers' perspective, has to be seen as a positive, and a positive reaction they got from their fellow supporters. In the main, they still have a bit of, a few people that they still need to win round if social media is anything to go by. However, it does feel like the tide has turned. The holding up of those yellow flyers on Friday night was significant, in my view at least. Did that feel to you like there'd been a bit of a turn in the tide?
I mean, without a doubt, you think back to the previous protests that have gone on. It all felt very small time. You know, it was people trying to do their bit, but the uptake wasn't big. It did feel, I was wandering around Hillsborough like before it happened and seeing the amount of people speaking to the guys who were handing out the flyers. Obviously spoke to some of the lads as well, and it did, yeah, it felt like the viewpoint of a lot of people had changed. And look, I saw an uptake in terms of how many people were picking them up, but even then it surprised me how many held them up. I think it surprised a lot of people, and I think to see, I mean, I don't know numbers, but I would imagine there was, you know, 7,000 or 8,000 people holding them up. It's a lot of people. And I think that the way it was, this one felt a lot better than the ones that have done before. It was a lot more effective. It felt a lot more respectful about the way they went about it. And this is a real side note, but I was also impressed with how it was handled on the outside as well, because obviously I left the ground quite late on Friday night, and I didn't see any, you know, any litter around. I didn't see, you know, there wasn't like yellow flyers strewn all over the floor outside. And I was a little bit worried about that, because it is something that can, you know, leave a bit of a down.
It's just your reputation when you're trying yeah, to make a point.
Yeah. But yeah, so they were, I thought it was done well this time around. And I think it was also important that Wednesday won the game as well, because if they'd lost, it could have been used as like, you've put the team off and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I just thought it was done. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just thought it was done really respectfully. The interesting thing now is where they go next and what happens after this.
Yeah, I think that's the key from their point of view. I mean, we should add a little bit of context here. Essentially, the Flyers essentially said enough was enough, and detailed the reasons, or some of the reasons why these supporters want Chancery out of the club. The difficulty that they have is that there's a very serious matter of trying to stay in the division. And anything that may detract to what's going on the pitch, any distraction that may put players under added pressure, is going to make it difficult for the fan group to gain further support.
Yeah.
Which is why I think Friday night worked. It was a kind of silent protest. Those people who held up the flyers made their point. It was very visual, but there was no distractions. It was did it as the players walked out, made the point, that was it. If they want to make significant ground in trying to get the message through to Chancery, I mean, I guess he's probably got the message, but whether or not he cares a jot is another thing. They are probably going to have to up their game, and that is where the difficulty lies, because upping your game tends to, in this case, mean disruption.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You know, the whole support the team, not the regime sort of message, people will struggle to get on board when the next step is something that does affect the team. And like you say, that as much as somebody might be on board with protesting and making themselves heard, they won't be happy doing it at the expense of the team and at the expense of going back down to League One. So, yeah, I think they've got to get this next one. They've got to get it really right. And I'm generally really interested to see where they go with it. It does feel with the 1867 group that there's been a shift. They seem to be going about things a bit differently, and it's worked, because the amount of people who are on board with what they're doing has changed significantly over the last, you know, probably month or so. So yeah, I'm really interested to see where they go next. Like you say, whether it makes any difference or not is that very much remains to be seen.
Yeah, that's my fear. I say fear, like I'm I'm trying to offer some balance here. But if they want Chancery out, he will do so very much on his own terms. Very quickly before we wrap up, a much bigger match than last night coming up this weekend. Obviously, Millwall aren't too far ahead of Wednesday in the table, and you need to be looking to be beating those teams, as I said right at the very start. No one's going to give you too much stick if you don't beat Leicester, but if you're playing against a team who isn't really that far ahead of you in the table, then that's where any criticism comes in. However, this is going to be very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I mean, I've been to Millwall before. It's not an easy place to go. It's got a bit of an aura about it, Millwall. Obviously, with the reputation that they've got and all that kind of thing, it's I think if you look at the next four games, you've got to be looking at sort of a minimum of 7 points. I think if Wednesday want to get out of this, and I think the 1 point would potentially be this one. You know, you've got, I think it's Millwall away, Bristol City at home, Rotherham away, and then Plymouth at home. You're looking at the Bristol City game and the Plymouth game, and you're going, we should really be getting something of those at home. Rotherham are obviously really struggling, so even away, it's not really away, is it? It's just down the road. So I think with those three, you'd be looking at trying to get something out of those properly. I don't think a draw away at Millwall will be the worst thing, but yeah, it is one of those games, given where they're at, that there will be some sort of expectation to get a result. And Wednesday, as we mentioned, Wednesday needs to be beating the teams around them, the Leicesters and the Southamptons. And obviously after these four games, you've got Leeds who are just destroying everything in the path at the moment. So yeah, you don't want to go into that Leeds game with your confidence already knocked. It's just, yeah, we say it a lot, don't we, that, you know, we talk about big games and big periods, and this game won't define you, and that game won't define you. But I think the next four games, for me, decide whether Wednesday are in the Championship next season or not.
Thanks, Joe. We'll be there for this week's episode of Everywhere and Nowhere. We'll be back next week, where Alex might join us for more than a couple of minutes. And we will talk over that match, well, and anything else that may happen between now and then. Thanks again, Joe. Thanks for everybody for joining us. We'll see you again next week. Cheers.